you know, what I'm learning there, what I'm hearing you say, Matt, as dads, you know, you can't take the same approach mm-hmm. with each child. You can't just go with what's comfortable to you and what you know. You really need to go to school on how to access their heart.
Yes.
And that is going to take some work. It's going to take some investigation, and so as dads, like, but this is our responsibility. Well, hello, dads. Welcome again to the Dad Nation podcast for our December 2023 episode. And I'm excited today because it's been a few months that I've been in the room with Mr. Matt.
Yes, I'm excited to be back.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
The busy physician life.
Yeah, lots going on. Family, job, other ministry opportunities. So
traveling to colleges and universities.
Yeah, seeing the sun and doing a fall break. But I will say I was really encouraged by your Montana podcast. Awesome.
That was fun.
Alex and Josiah and DK too.
We were super exhausted that day in Montana. You know, we'd come off a double Montana dad camp weekend, and we got straight to the podcast that afternoon, and I could barely keep my eyes open. And I was like, oh man, this is not going to go well. But actually just listened to that episode with my wife on a walk, and we're like, you know what? It was
great. All right.
And we went for a long time. I was like, wow.
It was great.
Chapter one, there was so much.
Dense.
We should have broken that baby up into probably three or four
yeah.
episodes. But yeah, welcome to any new listeners. I don't know if, you know, we've been in Portugal and France, and we talked about the podcast a little bit. So if you're a new listener from there, welcome. Or just a new listener from our big fall run of Dad Camp, just welcome. This is just a monthly, you know, maybe it's going to be more than monthly now, set of episodes of just trying to create space to encourage fathers, both here in the U.S. and all over the world that are listening to just encourage you, to remind you of how much you matter. And this is an extension of a ministry called Dad Camp. So if you're listening and you've never heard of Dad Camp, you just kind of found this podcast, you can check out dadcamp.org and find out more about just the parent organization of where this podcast is coming from. But we're just on mission to build stronger fathers,
yes.
build stronger families. And we have a dream to see a world where every family has a great dad. And God's been writing an amazing story through Dad Camp. And this is, I think, kind of the third year of this podcast, believe it or not, that we're kind of in now. And it's been a fun journey, and it's been growing. So we've been just encouraged to keep on keeping on. So question of the day, we kind of like to do that with whoever's
QOD.
Here. But Matt, the QOD is a question that actually our staff, Doug Migrant, asked us yesterday.
Dougie.
And he said this is for you. Think music or sports. Okay. You can have anyone's talent inside of a musical person or a sports professional. You can have any one of their talent and experience it and what they have experienced in their profession. You could become them. Like, it's still you, but you've been given their talent.
Okay.
Who would you choose? What moment? What person? Where would you go?
Easy.
Oh,
Michael Jordan.
You know, I had a feeling this was going to come with you, but
easy. Yeah, Michael Jordan. I mean, as soon as the question was coming out of your mouth, I was thinking, got that one. You know, there's always those debates.
Certain moment or season where you'd like, I would have liked to have been Michael Jordan and experience what he's experiencing at this specific juncture of his career, or
if I had to pick one moment, it would be the championship that he won after his dad died. I'm a big basketball fan, and I love documentaries, and Last Dance kind of brought that moment back to me, a documentary about the Bulls.
Yep.
But his emotion after that one, he's like hugging the trophy and just crying, like on the floor crying. And you can tell it was this moment of like, because his dad died and he kind of lost some joy in the game. He went and tried baseball. That didn't work out quite the way he wanted, but he went and followed his dream there, and then it was his next season back that they won that championship. I think that would be – I don't know what all emotions were going on in him, but I thought that was an amazing thing to see.
Good one. Yeah. I thought you'd go with Jordan, but, yep, so that did not surprise me at all. And I went with just, you know, I'm a baseball guy at heart. I love all sports, but there's nothing – I wasn't, you know, in my baseball life, I wasn't a home run hitter, but I did hit them. So it was, you know, but I wasn't a power hitter, but I had the ability to hit them from time to time.
Yeah.
There's nothing like the feeling – of hitting one over the fence in a game. Like, you're just like, oh, like, it's just there, it's awesome. So I would have taken myself to the 1992 season, and I would have liked to have been Joe Carter with the Toronto Blue Jays.
Okay.
And I would have liked to, like, experience the whole season as Joe Carter, you know, that whole 162 game season and then that run to win that World Series. But game six, you know, he hits a three-run shot to win the World Series, like a walk-off home run to win it. And to be in that moment, to hit that ball and that whatever that – I mean, I can still see him jumping up and down as he's going from home to first. And, and the fans going nuts, and like, you're winning on your home field. I mean,
that'd be
awesome. A walk-off home run in the World Series with your favorite team.
Oh, man.
I kind of took myself to that moment. If I could have felt, could feel that.
Yeah, yeah.
It'd be something.
Yeah, that is a great question of the day.
So, I know, like, it was good. I liked it, too. I was like, if you could have their talent.
Yeah.
You know, and we had some, like, we had all kinds of answers I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
You know, one of our staff members said, Aretha Franklin. Like, I wasn't seeing that in her. You know, I wasn't expecting that. And she's just like, her voice and just her talent. If I could be her for a moment.
Yeah, like, I could see that.
He's like, okay. You know, so, but we had to think of another Michael Jordan. But yeah, it was kind of all over the place. So that's great. Great question. So, cool. So we have been the last couple of months without you, jumping into a resource that we used at Dad Camp this year. And we thought, you know, going forward, it probably would serve the dads of Dad Camp well. And even, like I said, I hope that there's many listening that don't go to Dad Camp, because this podcast isn't for just Dad Camp dads. It's for dads. But this we used a resource called Parenting this year. It's written by Andy and Sandra Stanley, and it's the subtitle is Getting It Right. And we use that particular resource to create content around at our events this year. And the response was just really strong. Like, this is a tool, whether you love Andy Stanley or not, the what's in this particular resource and the parenting ideas and strategies and stories, it's really, really strong.
Yeah.
And so the feedback's been great. So we thought, you know, it would serve dads well to just go a little deeper into that resource and to talk about it more and talk about how, you know, how it's impacted us and how, you know, and while I was like, man, I wish I would have had this 20 years ago or 25 years ago when my fatherhood journey started, I didn't, but it's really challenged me, stretched me, and it's just, I feel like a big value add. So the first chapter was about just this big idea of getting, what is your it? And do you have a parenting it? And so I'd strongly encourage you to go back and listen to that episode if you haven't. There's chapter one, I would say, of all the parenting books I've ever read. Chapter one in and of itself had so much in it that, I mean, we could have created several episodes out of it. There's so much to be learned. I go back to that chapter a lot. But, you know, the Stanleys, as they wrote this book, their parenting it became something to the effect of raising kids that will choose to be with you even when they no longer have to be.
Right.
And the big idea was, if they're as adults, when they've left the house, if they're still coming back, if they're still choosing to do life with you, it means that you've built a relationship that matters, and that and it's inside relationship that we can still have influence. Because if we don't have relationship, we don't have influence. And mm-hmm. as parents, that's ultimately what we want to always, you know, have is that influence with our kids to guide them, you know, not just when they're under our roof, but throughout life, and to have that relationship. And so they parented their kids when they were younger with that idea of, we want that relationship to be intact when they leave and they no longer have to be with us, they still will choose to be. And so that then created, like, you know, their desire to choose a faith for themselves. That was ultimately their big it, was that our kids would choose faith for themselves. But that could only happen if they maintained relationship. And so everything was kind of coming out of that. And so that's where we started. And then the next two chapters, we're going to get into that. The third chapter today was all about these stages of parenting. And so last month I had the privilege of being with my good friend, our good friend DK. It was his first time on the podcast. We talked about the first two stages of parenting, when you're from birth to like 5-6 years old. We call the discipline years, and then the training years, that elementary kind of time frame. And that leads us to today, to talking about this middle school, high school stage of parenting that the book describes as the coaching years. And so I'll set it up, and then Matt, you jump in. But you know, last month we even mentioned this quote of kids transition from one stage to the other without really even thinking about it. They're just growing up. They're just being kids, and they go from one to the other. But parents don't. You know, parents don't naturally transition from the discipline years to the training years to the coaching years. Like, we can often continue to just parent like we did in the discipline years, or we parent like we did in the training years. And if we don't change, it's not going to go real well, as we hoped. And so when you think, Matt, because I'm doing all the talking here, I want to let you jump in. Like, so when you think about that shift from the training years to the coaching years in your kids, let's talk about our kids first. Like, what did you see change in them? Did the relationship change at all between you and them as they moved into this phase of life? How did they change? What did you observe? What was going on? Do you remember about those days?
As you know, like, all of our kids are individuals, and then there's these differences between having a daughter and having a son. So you and I have joked about this on the podcast, but I probably did miserably with my first child. My first child got me as, like, I wasn't saved, and I had none of this information behind me, so I was just kind of flailing around trying to figure it out. But my daughter, who's now 23 years old, when she was moving into this phase around 12 or 13, it was just hormones and a lot going on. The funny thing about for her, like, I didn't really notice a lot of change, but my daughter kind of had me wrapped around her finger.
Okay.
I'm hearing from her mom and my wife at the time that's like, all this conflict and this bad behavior and this, like, I'm not seeing any of it. We have a great relationship, and it's all daddy and hopping in my lap and talking to me. And so I know with her, I didn't see a big change from kind of where you're supposed to go from those training to coaching years. And so also I think my parenting didn't change a lot.
Okay.
Probably to her detriment. You know, I just didn't see a lot of change there. And so I don't think, and I didn't know about these stages. And so I just didn't really go into that phase until much later in her development, teenage years. And then I have a 19-year-old now. I will say that these phases are like not like snap and then you change. I'm noticing how fluid it is, and that some parts of their life, you are, for him, I am going from this kind of coaching into what we'll talk about, you know, is more of the friendship years. But he's 19 and he's in college, and so it's not a flip the switch kind of thing. But I am seeing where he's getting more independent and he wants to make his own decisions. He's willing to hear from me, but he's kind of like, hey, I'm 800 miles away. Like, this is my chance to sort of do my own thing and make my own decisions. Yep. And then my 12-year-old, it's kind of fluid with him. Like, he's just now getting into where we're trying to pull back some, give him the responsibilities that he can handle.
Yep.
And in other places, it's like, no, I'm still making the decision and still training you. Like, that's just not a good decision. We're not going to do that. So to your point, what I've learned or seen is that I think it's really fluid. You don't sort of, like you said, it's not like, okay, at 12, we flip a switch and now we're in the coaching years and we turn off the training. It's more of a fluid thing, and we see those changes naturally happen as they grow, but they're kind of fluid and growing into it and changing as well.
Right, right. Yep. I would, you know, you mentioned like the difference with sons and daughters. My oldest is a, you know, he's a son as our firstborn. And, you know, I was always, him and I, you know, we naturally he liked sports. I like sports. I coached him. It was like we were together. And as he went into this, you know, this teenage stage of life, I found his, like, there wasn't a whole lot of noticeable like change there for me. Our relationship didn't feel a whole lot different. You know, the only thing I really remember is like a little less of me as he got older and older, and a little more of his friend group. And so there was a little separation there on the time, but he was always a quiet kid. So he was quiet when he was young. He was quiet as a teenager. And so that didn't feel like, oh, he's changing. Like he's still just quiet, cool, you know.
Right.
So that was, the girl's a little different. Our middle one, I would say it felt at times, looking back and say it felt harder to parent her, but it was because she was actually more open with us. She was the one coming down, and as the hormones were kicking in, or just as life was happening, she was trying to trying to figure it out, like more verbally.
Right.
And like the meltdowns and the life is the sky is falling and yeah. I can't, and, you know, I'm not, you know, and just, you know, and so it felt harder, but it's because she was actually giving us actually more access to her what was going on in her world.
Yeah.
My other daughter internalized everything, kind of went up to her room, and while it seemed like, she must be doing good, like everything's fine, we're not hearing much, she's kind of doing all right, but I think she was just internalizing so much and battling things that she was actually, while it seemed harder to parent the middle one, we were not parenting well the younger one as much because she wasn't inviting us in, and we weren't trying to access that really well, and we're falsely assuming that everything was okay when sometimes everything wasn't okay.
Right.
And now we look back like, man, I wish we would have tapped into a few things a little more because there were things going on that we didn't know the depth of it.
Yeah.
But that's how, you know, she was handling it.
She wasn't communicating it.
So, but yeah, we saw that. But then like the shift for us to go from being on the field getting them ready for the game, that training years, and explaining the why and teaching them how to transition to like, now it's time for me to get on the sidelines and let them go play the game. You know, that's a hard transition to start letting go and letting them. They're going to make mistakes, or they're going to make poor choices at times if you truly are letting them go, if you're not holding their hand through it all. But that's a way more, I think, difficult. I think in the book I read, parenting adjustment from the training years to the coaching years may be the most important of all. And I think there's some truth to that. Like it's hard.
I agree with that.
But it's a different one. How about what did that look like for you? Like, so we talk about that shift as our kids became teenagers and life's looking different for them, and they're, you know, navigating the world a little differently. How did that shift from the training to the coaching years look like for you specifically?
Yeah. You know, they touched on some things about conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things I noticed was a big difference was conversation. I think I learned along the way with each consecutive child that my conversation was shifting more for something that maybe sounded almost like a lecture.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm imparting this wisdom to you that will help you in the future. You should just listen to me, take it all in, and apply it in your life. Sort of that was like the training years, right? Yep. You're coaching, you're telling them these are the skills you need, this is what you need to do. But the deeper, richer conversations and communication was in those coaching years where it's like, I should be doing more listening and connecting and affirming and sometimes waiting for the questions to be asked to then give that wisdom. And that, again, has looked different in each kid. One thing I love about my daughter all the time growing up and even today, I can ask her one question and she can talk to me for 15 minutes about what I asked, about other things that I didn't ask, about tangential things, about like I can get the whole picture of her heart and what's going on in her life. And I don't
just from one kind of simple open-ended question.
One open-ended question.
Invite her into that space.
Sit back, listen. Maybe ask a question when she's finished about some details about what she just shared. And so conversation with her has always been easy. But I think the goal is like to know our children's hearts. That's what we really want to know. My son, you and I have talked about this, Braden and Cole have very similar personalities. He's quiet. He's a classic middle child. He doesn't fight for attention. He doesn't need attention. He doesn't want the spotlight. He's a deep thinker and has a lot to add to conversation, a lot to say, but unless you're pulling it out of him, you may not get it.
Yep.
And so sometimes I would just see him down when he was a teenager and how'd your day go? Fine.
Fine.
Anything
good?
Something bad happened today at school? No.
Not really.
No. And so I'm like, man, something's going on. I can see it. I know my son. So I had to develop this way of asking questions that couldn't have a yes or no answer, couldn't have a one-word answer. So what was the most challenging thing that you faced today? What's something that is making you sad in your life right now? What do you find the most joy in at this moment in your life? What's your toughest friendship situation right now? So I just had to find more in-depth questions to ask him than my daughter.
More specific versus just open-ended.
Right.
Just here's the open-ended, let her go.
Right. Because he'd be happy to take that and go, yes, fine.
Fine.
Good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm good.
Nothing, you know.
But a targeted question, he had to kind of really evaluate his heart a little bit.
Yeah. And I think we've talked about then that requires me as his dad because he has to think about it. He won't boom, snap, have an answer. So it had to be okay with a silence for a while and saying, yep, I'll let you process that and answer it. Or sometimes there'd be a really long silence where I'd say, if you're not ready to share that, that's okay. It's just something I'd really want to have a conversation with you about. So like maybe we circle back on that one in a couple of days or over the weekend when we have our father-son time, you'll share that one with me and give you time to think about it. Okay. And move on to something else. And then there's my youngest, Kylan. You've experienced Kylan. He's a boisterous kind of like extrovert, his personality. He's a little bit different than my daughter, though. I can't just ask him and he's going to give it all, but I can almost do an interview with him. Okay, what about this? Then he'll tell me. Okay, what about this?
I gotcha.
And then whatever he said, that prompts some other questions. Oh, I noticed you said this about this conflict with a friend today. How did that come about? How did you solve that? Do you need help with that? And so each child, it's been a different approach on how to have those conversations and make sure they feel comfortable sharing that information.
And so I think, you know, what I'm learning there, what I'm hearing you say, Matt, as dads, you know, you can't take the same approach mm-hmm. with each child. You can't just go with what's comfortable to you and what you know. You really need to go to school on how to access their heart.
Yes.
And that is going to take some work. It's going to take some investigation, and so as dads, like, but this is our responsibility, mm-hmm. you know, moms too, but you know, as dads though, like, not just defaulting to what you know and what's easy, but growing with your child. And as you know, grow with them, understanding of them, you know, you lean into that.
Right.
And so I think that's, you know, that's really, really, really key. And you know, one of the, they said that this stage is where you shift to connecting over correcting. That's the big idea here. I think like connecting over correcting.
Yeah, that's good.
And then they offer, three kind of tools or ways to do that. And you've kind of, jumped into one of those, and that's the cultivating constant conversations. Mm-hmm. That's one of the ways to connect over correct. I would just, going back to one of my shifts, when you're going from training to coaching, you're kind of releasing control a little bit.
Yeah.
Probably one of my faults in my personality is a little bit of a perfectionist. And so you're trying, even with your kids, you're trying to raise perfect kids.
Mm-hmm.
Or, when you let go, suddenly you're losing a little of that control of what you've been able to, an image or something that you've tried to create for your family, or you try to a culture, and suddenly when they're out making their own choices, well, what if they make a choice that, it might affect my reputation?
Yeah. Reflect poorly on me.
And there's that whole part of that, that I'd say I wouldn't say I was preoccupied with that, but if I'm being honest, being in ministry,
mm-hmm.
There's a certain expectations how a pastor's kids should right. act, and then you start releasing control, and your kids aren't perfect, and they're never going to be perfect. You shouldn't expect them, but then you make it about you more than you make it about them in that moment. And so that was a shift for me that I had to just say, hey, it's okay. And my kids are going to make mistakes just like everyone else's
right.
kids. And
right.
just because I'm what I am, that doesn't...
Yeah, being doesn't, a pastor and doesn't
what is,
change that.
And my reputation is not what's important here. What's important is the growth and development of my son and my daughters. And so that was, being honest, I had to, be very mindful of that. And I remember there's a story, this wasn't in the reading, but I remember hearing a story from Andy. I think it's in the book somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But he just talked about a time when he kind of got caught skipping church, and someone from the church saw, and because he was a pastor's kid, and someone saw him skipping church and kind of brought that to the attention of the powers to be, and brought that to his dad's attention. And his dad's response was, "You just tell that person to go parent their own kid, and I'll parent mine."
Yeah.
And it was, but he said, he just felt this protection from his dad in that moment. It wasn't his dad, had a reputation as a pastor, and now he's breaking a rule, like, I'm skipping church and I'm kind of doing that. And his dad's like, "That's fine. Like, I'm not going to worry about what people think."
Right.
You know what? You take care of your kids, and I'll take care of mine.
Yeah.
And he said that was it. Like, they never even talked about him skipping church. And he said, just knowing his dad's response, he said, guess where I was the following Sunday? I was in the front row with my buddy listening to my dad preach. But it was that respect and that just knowing that my dad's for me, not against me.
Right.
But I thought that was just a great story. But going back to these three things, so cultivating constant conversations,
mm-hmm.
Don't bail, let them fail, and getting interested in what interests them. And I think you've also alluded to that, Matt. As you get to know their heart and get to know their bend, how to bring out, what's going on inside their hearts, that's part of getting interested in what interests them too.
Mm-hmm.
But cultivating constant conversations. That I would say for me, and of those three things, that was probably my least strong.
Okay.
My wife, good at it. I tended to default to, if they want to go to their room, and then okay, then let them go to their room. Like, I wouldn't press into, I need to go. How can I get and tap into their heart today? How can I make sure that they know that I'm interested, or I would kind of, all right, that's where they want to go, then I'll go do something different. I wasn't intentional looking back, I wish I would have been more intentional here. This just is involving, this isn't, you brought this up, it's not a lecture. Cultivating constant conversations isn't to create a spot where you could tell them how life works, but it's right. more about where you're creating an environment where you they get to tell you what they think.
Right.
How did you, you've talked a little bit about it, but how did you do that?
Yeah. We, well, like I said, with my daughter, it's pretty easy. Just, you know, ask her a question. I think we can, before I go into that, we can, we in our minds as dads, as parents, I think we, our thought pattern is like, we've been there, we've done that. We can save you so much pain and making mistakes if you'll just listen to our lecture and then apply it. For whatever reason, God didn't design it like that, because every generation, if you think about how you were with your parents, did you just take everything they said and then apply it to your life? And so we can't approach it like that as far as the lecture goes. So it's like the conversation. My daughter, easy. Just ask her a question. She'll share her heart with me. She'll ask me questions. My son, and I learned this from dad camp, and I can't remember which one it was, but it was something that was shared from one of the dads that was like, make an appointment to have a conversation with your son. So because my son didn't just open up freely and I had to create a certain environment, he and I just had every weekend we would have an hour, hour and a half.
Yeah, love that.
To just, we called it brothers in Christ time, our BIC time, B-I-C time. And what would we do? Nothing special. We'd usually go down to the basement and play pool. But within that activity, we would just talk.
Okay.
And that's where I got the richest and deepest conversations and a look into his heart. And then my 12-year-old, he likes fun activities. So I'll get a lot from him at a Pacer game. Right, like we're watching the game, we're having fun, we're cheering, but in between we're having conversation. We go to Topgolf, same thing, because I want to have fun with my dad, and while we're having that activity, then that conversation just naturally flows from him. So I love something that Sandra said was be a student of your children. Like, so you have to take time to get to know them really well, study them, watch their habits, see how they respond to certain things, do some trial and error. And the better you get at knowing them, the better you can figure out the best ways to have those conversations.
Yep. Yeah. The car for me was a good place, you know, because we were a sports family. All my kids love sports, and I, you know, we loved it with them, and I coached so much, and but a lot of car rides to and from school and practices and games that. Was good space to try and again, you know, I had to learn, you know, I'd keep the coaching hat on, you know, in the car, you know, and just be like, you know, as we're talking about, maybe it was the game, like not give them my you know, evaluation of their performance or that. It would just be like, so how'd it go, how'd you feel about it, and just try to encourage, but then in life, just like, you know, just, you know, coming home from school, like, tell me about how your day was, and, you know, tell me about those, you know, is there anything hard going on? How are your relationships? How's that friendship going? Mm-hmm. Like, that was a space in an activity, like you said, with your boys, that was for Cole and I, like in the activity, you know, I threw so much batting practice to that kid over the years where we go and just throw baseball after baseball. But then there's conversations that are happening as we're just doing that together. And that was always a good space for them. And then I would say the other thing, place for us as a family, was around the dinner table.
Yeah.
Again, when things got, as they got older and they got more busy, that dinner table time felt like it got less and less. But it was still, I think, time we all enjoyed. And while the conversations may not have gone too far because everybody's at the table, you really got a sense of how their hearts were doing. Mm-hmm. You know, how was the joy meter in each one of those kids? And you could sense, you know, something was a little off with one of them today. And then you could go tap into that, you know, outside of that dinner conversation. Like, what was, they weren't as, the joy meter was down today, or they weren't as, you know, they weren't as communicative tonight. So that was another space that we found to be a place to cultivate. The other thing, I'm looking at our, we were like today, just to segue, I'm looking at the time and I'm like, all right, our goal was 30 minutes on this conversation. And we
I told you that'd be hard.
We're now at 34 and we're not even halfway through this thing. So how are we going to do this? So we're just gonna keep going. But this is such good advice. Like, but when you're in those conversations, to not freak out.
Yeah.
Such a great reminder. Like, and by freak out, meaning don't exhibit any strong emotion. And that was either, and they said that's in the good and the bad. Don't over emote positively or negatively. Just be even keel, listen. And if you're hearing some things that are like shocking you, or you're like, what is happening? Just don't freak out. Stay in the moment. And then maybe, you know, go freak out with your spouse later if you're married, or with a friend. Like, can you believe this? Like, but in the moment, just let them, otherwise they're going to be like, you know what? Every time I go talk to mom or dad, they just freak out. I'm like, I'm not going to do that anymore. It's not safe space, or that's not what I was looking for. I just wanted to, you know, share something, and they're just like going over the top and reactive, and well, you're never going to do that again, or So I thought that was really good advice. They said practice the poker face and say, oh really? Tell me more.
Yeah. There was one part about that I disagreed with. Okay. I definitely think in the negative. When things are shocking to you or your response is kind of negative, like the freak out's a bad deal. And I think our kids want to see stability in us, and it kind of maybe gives them a sense of like, man, mom or dad's like out of control or doesn't have control of the situation. Mm-hmm. Sandra made that argument for the flip side, when your children do something great and you're like, don't be that parent necessarily that's like over emoting at the game or, man, you did such a great job. But I was thinking of my wife's personality in that, and she's got she loves Kylan achieving something, right? And Braden achieving something. That Braden played soccer in high school, and Kylan's doing basketball, and even Ryan running track. Like, when they would achieve something, I mean, she's the mom, like you're turned around looking back in the stands, like that's how she's cheering for them. She's so excited for them. And you had brought up this quote from, I think it was from Craig Rochelle, I think it was the Global Leadership Summit, where it was like transparency and empathy with consistency
equals trust.
And I'm like, she's established a consistency of that level of excitement that for her to subdue it would look phony, fake. I think any of our kids would be like, well, what's wrong?
Yeah.
Like, even though they might roll their eyes.
Because they see that at home. They see that in the stands.
Right.
They see that in the car.
It's consistent.
It's right.
It's consistent. She sees Colin after school. She's hugging him and kissing him on the cheek. And yeah, he's rolling his eyes, but he loves it.
If that was me in the stands, my girls would be like, dad is embarrassing me. Like, that is not like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, stop.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I love that you're happy for me, but like, just tell me in the car, like don't.
Right. And even my middle, Braden, you know, he's pretty low key guy. And like after a soccer game or something, Jamie's so excited and hugging him and kissing him. And he's not super comfortable with that level of emotion. You can see he's just kind of like, doesn't know what to do with it. It's not off putting to him. He just doesn't respond in that way. But I do see, like, he's excited about something that happened at school, and he calls Jamie. Hey, this happened. Like, he knows that she's going to get that energy level up to, like, what he wants the response to be with that excitement. So, yeah, like we said, we don't always agree with everything that we're reading in the book. No. So that was just one thing that I was like, yeah, I think on the negative, you don't panic. You don't come bring the hammer down. You sort of stay even keeled and stable. But on the excitement side,
be
who you are, be authentic, be transparent. Yep.
Very valid.
Yeah.
You know what? Let's do this. We're going to push pause on this conversation.
Yes.
We're going to wrap up this conversation. We're going to continue in part two of this month's discussion. We're going to continue this coaching conversation and then maybe move into the friendship years as well in the next conversation that we'll probably release in a couple of weeks. If you saw last month, we did two episodes. One was the first Saturday of the month is our typical way of doing it. And then we released another episode, the third, I think it was a couple of weeks later. And so we're going to kind of keep that as a way to just kind of shorten these kind of conversations and keep them going and keep you engaged. So let's do that. So if you're enjoying this, you know, come back. You know, we're not done talking about the coaching years. And like I said, this is probably the most important transition of parenting that we make as dads. And so come back for as we continue with talking about don't bail, let them fail, and get interested in what interests them. And then we're going to move to that next stage. But as we wrap this up, just a couple of dad camp just stories to tell. In the last month, we got reports from Uganda. I just wanted to highlight our ministry in Uganda and what's happening there. But there was a couple of dad camp events in Uganda. And, you know, the reports came back. We had like over 800, I think, dads and students come out to these two events. We saw 67 dads respond for first-time commitments for Christ.
Wow.
And just, we are celebrating that.
Yes.
You know, and if you're not a person of faith, you're just a dad that's interested in becoming a better dad. You know, we celebrate that because we just believe that when you're in a relationship with Christ, that just allows you to be the best dad you can be because of all that God has done for us in and through us, and then what we then can pour into our kids and the posture from which we can live and lead from.
Yes.
It's just, it's life-changing. And so we're celebrating that. We're celebrating just what's happening with dad camp in Uganda. And so we just wanted to share that good news. There's other great stories to tell, but I'll save those for the next episode. But be praying. If you want to, you know, if you could pray right now, just pray for our team in Uganda and pray for their just their ongoing work there through dad camp. And so Emma, if you're listening, which I know you do, you know, you have what it takes. We believe in you.
Yes.
And we're so proud of you. To all of our brothers in Uganda, just way to go. And as we say, you have what it takes. So go do whatever it takes. Whether you're listening here in the U.S. or somewhere else in the world, go do whatever it takes to be the strongest father that you can be, knowing that just there's just nothing more important than your job as a father, and knowing that when you're strong, your family is strong. And that's what this is all about. So love you guys, and stay tuned for part two of this conversation come back in a couple of weeks, and we'll keep on keeping on. Love you guys. Take care.